Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to WAMS Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Burke Allen. It's a beautiful Friday afternoon here in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Glorious spring afternoon. And we've got great guests today, including the author of Drive Free, or Damn Close to It, Anthony Scavuzzo will join us in just a couple of minutes to talk about how the most important information you will ever receive before you buy, lease, finance, drive, or trade another vehicle is included in his book. He says he's developed a secret strategy and wrote the book on how to immediately eliminate car ownership expense from your budget. And a little later on in the show, we're going to talk to Dr. Kenneth Bolton, who's written a new book on the great American composer Eli Siegmeister. We'll find out more about this gentleman and why some fantastic composers and musicians tend to stay in the public eye for much longer than others, while others tend to fade away from view. So lots to get to on today's show. If you'd like to be a part of the program, the number to call is 718-506-1944, 718-506-1944. That's a free call in the New York City metropolitan area. And let's welcome our first guest to the program, the author of Drive Free or Damn Close to It, Guaranteed, as they say down south, Anthony Scavuzzo. Hey, Anthony, thanks for being on the program.
Burke, thank you for having me. I'm honored to do the show.
Now, I have to tell you, I'm a father of a couple of teens who drive, and so we don't have a car in the driveway. We have a fleet of cars, and it is expensive to keep a fleet of vehicles on the highway. Just in maintenance alone, spent about $12,000 last year, and that's without buying a new vehicle. So I am very intrigued by the title of your program, Drive Free or Damn Close to It, Guaranteed. And you say, don't drive your car or truck another mile without this information. That's according to the guys at Wide Open Magazine. So you have my attention, sir. Tell me how you can drive free or damn close to it.
Well, number one, it's not what people think. You know, people think they can. The most common mistakes made when people go buy cars is that they negotiate the price of a car without knowing the actual value of that car. That's the number one mistake. They take the dealership's word for how much that car's value is. I show you exactly how to find there's a value for every single car, and you'll know exactly how to determine the value of a car. The second biggest mistake is that people are payment buyers. People will walk into a dealership, and they'll see a car that's $35,000, and they'll tell the car dealership, well, I want this car, but I can only afford $400 a month payments. So they, you know, it's common today that they give them 72-month loans on these cars. And when they buy the car, they're upside down, meaning they owe more on the car than it's worth from the time they drive it off the lot. So we have to you know, include some solutions, some protections against this. I figured this out a long time ago because, you know, I used to buy new vehicles. And I know a guy that owns a car dealership, a Ford dealership, and I bought a brand new Bronco. And I got it like I was an employee for Ford. I got it 3% behind the invoice, a $2,000 instant cash rebate, and all of that. I drove this vehicle and still lost, when I got rid of the vehicle, I still lost $7,000 on it. And I was beside myself because I'm not really tight, but I'm very money conscious. So, I figured out, how am I going to do this to where I can purchase a car and avoid all of the tricks and the traps and know how to handle depreciation, how to handle my loan, how to handle everything about this car purchase and this car ownership experience. And I figured that out very, very simply. It's not rocket science, but there's some things that you have to know. And some of the most important things that you have to know have to do with how you're being treated with regards to cars. right now, 85% of everybody that buys a car goes on the internet to find the value of the car. You can't find the true value of a car anywhere online. Zero. It can't happen. Dealers and wholesalers and insurance companies and banks pay a fee to NADA and Edmunds and the Black Book and Kelley Blue Book to get true wholesale values. I show you how to get those values for free, how to have somebody disclose them to you for absolute free. So we'll start there. Number one, when you go to buy a car, you're going to know the value of the car. Number two, I'm going to show you how to avoid all of the financing traps, all of the fees and the nonsense, to where when you purchase a car, your car's not going to depreciate faster than your loan. Unfortunately, most people who own a car that finance it are in that situation today as we speak. They're making payments on a car, and the car is losing value faster than the loan. So when they go to get rid of the car, they're going to find out that their car's worth, let's say, I'll just throw out an example, say the car's worth $8,000. They owe $13,000, $14,000 on it. So that's not a good situation to be in. I show you how to simply avoid that. Depreciation, I show you how to handle depreciation. All cars lose value, but there's a methodology to how they lose value and why they lose value. I very simply show you how to handle the depreciation of a car to where you're not going to get beat up on it. You're not going to take a huge loss on it. And then I show you how to trade the car so that you can repeat the process. Burke, the last vehicle I bought was a Dodge truck. I paid $11,600 for the truck. It was a 2005. I bought it in 2007. I drove it for 20 months. And I sold it for $11,000.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It cost me $600 and $800 in interest to drive that car for 2 years. Now, I sat down with car experts, guys that own and are general managers at dealerships, and we figured every way to Sunday, if you would have went in as a consumer and purchased that vehicle, number one, you had never paid $11,600 for it because that was under the loan value. You would have paid a lot more for it. And we looked up the current value and everything. And I don't want to make this complicated. I'll make it very simple. And I can prove it, have proved it. It would have cost you between $8,000 and $13,000 in losses if you would have went in and bought the car, financed it for 4 years, drove it for 2 years, and then traded it in. That simple. You would have lost minimum $8,000. Would it cost me $600 plus $800 in interest?
The author of the book, Drive Free, You're Damn Close to a Guaranteed, is Anthony Scavuzzo. And I guess author is probably not exactly the right word because this is an entire plan. It's more than just a book you can read. Is that right, Anthony?
It is. It's short. I kept it. You don't have to be in the car business or even feel like you're in the car business to use this information successfully.
Had you ever spent time in the automotive industry before you sort of got taken to the cleaners or felt like you got taken to the cleaners by these guys? Or did you come at this as a consumer more?
Well, I kind of came at it as a consumer. My family owns businesses throughout Kansas City, and I've been in business most of my life. And I've dealt with leases, truck leasing, car leasing, you know, and I've owned quite a few cars. And, you know, I run with people who own car dealerships, who are general managers of car dealerships and stuff like that. And even though I had those prominent connections, I was still losing money on my cars. So, I mean, I love it when people say, oh, you know, I got a real good friend who works at a car lot. So that's great. I know the guy that owns the place, and I lost $7,000. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you have to use specific, you have to know the tricks and the traps of what's going on, and that's what I teach you. And the book explains very, very clear, very basic reading. Anybody will get it the first time you read it. I've got people continue to send me testimonials and call me. You know, one of the most popular calls I get is people call me and they get mad after they read the book because for the first time they're able to figure out how much money they lost on their vehicle, and they get angry, and they call me and they give me this phrase that tickles me. They say, do you realize, you know, they're telling me, do you realize how much money I can save doing this? Well, I say, yeah, that's why I wrote the book. You know, I mean, it was meant that way. And then there's sentimental value to this thing. I mean, I had a lady call me from up north. I'm waiting for a testimony right now. And she had a 2000 Honda Accord that was breaking down. She was divorced, had two or three kids, and she couldn't trade it in. Because she would go in to get another car, and she kept getting turned down for a car loan. And she wasn't getting turned. She learned in my book that she wasn't getting turned down on the car loan because she had bad credit. She was getting turned down on the car loan because she was paying too much for the car, and they weren't giving her enough for hers. And I explain that clearly in the book. Anyway, she read the book, and she went to the bank and got pre-qualified for a car loan, which she never knew she can do. And then one of her girlfriend's husbands worked at a car lot. So she knew after getting pre-qualified how much money she can spend on a car because she knew what the payment was and she was already approved and her bank was going to give her the money. So we know that she's not going to get turned down for the loan value of a car. So she went to him, purchased a car, and then sold her 2000 Accord to pay the taxes and stuff like that. On it, which it wasn't really worth anything because it kept breaking down, and she was on the verge of losing her job because she couldn't get to work because her car was always broke down. Anyway, she told me, she said, you know, Anthony, I went out and sat in my car in the driveway when this was all over with, and I cried. And it almost made me cry. She said, I can't believe all these years how I've been getting screwed doing this. They take advantage of me because I'm a woman, this, that, and the other. I've got a lot of women who buy this book who use it successfully. And, I mean, everybody who reads this will be able to use it successfully. But, I mean, you'll be surprised with many, many aspects of the book. The first one is that most people that get turned down for car loans are not getting turned down because they have bad credit. They're getting turned down because they're paying too much for the vehicle. It's that simple. You go in and buy a vehicle. And let's say that you're going to buy a used car, or your child's going to buy a used car, and let's say that it's $14,000. And they put $4,000 down on it, so now they're down to $10,000. And then they want you to buy it an extended warranty and whatever else. They have, you know, their fees and stuff, which I disclose in the book. So now you're up to, let's say, $11,500. And so they fill out the credit application, they send it to the bank, and the bank says, we're turning down this loan unless you can bring in a cosigner. So the person who did that feels really bad. And they say, man, I can't even qualify to get a car loan. Well, let me tell you what actually happened. What actually happened was is that the loan value of that car, the value that the bank sees that that car is worth, was probably about $9,000, $9,500. And you were trying to borrow $11,500. So you didn't have a big enough downstroke, enough money down to put on the car to even have a chance of getting qualified. Now, the flip side to that is if you have a good job and you have great credit, and I've seen this happen 100 times, and you go to buy a BMW, let's say, and you want to pay $50,000 for this BMW, and you put $10,000 down, that brings it down to $40,000. And you call the bank and say, I want $40,000 for this car, and they say, okay, I'll loan you the money. Because you've got great credit, because you've got a great job, because they know that they're going to get their money, they loan you the money. The loan value of that car can be $5,000 to $7,000 less than what you're borrowing. That's horrible. That means when you drive that car off the lot, I mean, you just lost thousands of dollars. So having great credit can hurt you just as bad as having average credit.
Anthony Scavuzzo is our guest today. They call him Mr. Drive Free, and you can find out more about him at MrDriveFree.com. That's MrDriveFree.com. And he's the author of a book about driving free or damn close to it, guaranteed. And you mentioned something earlier in the conversation, Anthony, about women being taken advantage of. And we've got a caller on the line. It's Sarah. Sarah's in Louisiana. And Sarah, your question for Anthony and the author of Drive Free.
Hi there, Anthony. I was wondering, do you feel like the auto dealers, car dealers, do they take advantage of women, young women that go in to buy cars for the first time or cars in general?
I'm going to tell you off the record, the answer is absolutely yes.
Just between the three of us.
Between the three. All right.
Everybody else that's listening, the answer is absolutely yes. But it's not just specific to women. It's specific to anybody that goes in and asks the wrong question. When you go in to buy a car, and you can walk up to a car and look at it and fall in love with it, and you can say, how much are you asking for this car? Which is the wrong question to ask. I teach you the right question to ask in the book. But the very first thing that every car salesman in the country is trained to do is to divert you from that question. Here's what they will come back with 100% of the time. What kind of payment can you afford?
Uh-huh.
Once they know what kind of payment you can afford, they know what to show you. As soon as they find out what payment you can afford, they're going to try to find out how strong you are qualification-wise to get a loan for a car. So now they know in their minds whether they're going to put you in a three-year loan or whether they can qualify you for a 72-month loan, none of which is what's doing you a favor.
Sarah, it sounds like you've had some experience with that when you've gone shopping for cars. Now, without mentioning any dealerships' names, we don't want to get into that, but have you felt taken advantage of when you've gone in to look for a car as a single lady?
Well, actually, I'm 20 years old, and I'm just now looking around for my first car. I've been to two different places, and like that's the first thing I asked is, I go find a car I like. I found a Nissan that I liked a lot, and it was at a used car dealership, and I couldn't get a straight answer on the price, and that was the question, is how much can you afford, needed to know my credit score and all that stuff, and I was very confused.
Yeah, and exactly what they want you to be is confused. Hey, look, I'm not against car dealerships, and I'm not against car dealers and the guys that sell cars. Car salesmen get paid on gross volume, how many cars they sell per month, and what the average gross profit of those cars are. So it's not in their best interest to give you the best deal. When you go on the Internet to look for cars, you're going to see prices ranging everywhere. You don't know what the market is. I'll show you how to find somebody who will be honest with you. I'll show you to get them to commit to show you the real value of that car. And it's real easy.
Sarah, good luck.
There's where you want to spend your time.
Good luck with your car shopping, and you'll have to check out Anthony's book on his website, MrDriveFree.com. We've got just a few minutes left with Anthony Scavuzzo, the author of Drive Free or Damn Close to It Guaranteed, and back with more with Anthony in 60 seconds. This is WAMS on the Blog Talk Radio Network.
The mountain.
Just joining us, we're following the breaking news out of Haiti. The largest, most powerful earthquake in the region's history has crippled the country, measuring 7.0.
Many of our staff have tried to leave, but were unsuccessful because walls from buildings and private residences fallen into the street.
The people of Haiti need your help.
The palace itself is damaged. The Minister of Commerce damaged.
There's kind of a wail as people are very frightened.
Thousands have been left without food, water, power and shelter.
My country is facing a major catastrophe.
Oh, this is probably one of the darkest nights in our history.
For more information on how you can help, go to 995themountain.com now.
We absolutely need, desperately, desperately need help.
995themountain.com.
It's WAMS Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Burke Allen. Thanks for listening today as we talk automobiles. We love them, we hate them, and Anthony Scavuzzo has written a book to help us drive them less expensively. It's called Drive Free or Damn Close to It Guaranteed. Anthony joins us from Kansas City. And Anthony, you say don't drive your car or truck another mile without the information in this book. And one of the things that you've mentioned, I think, is pretty common knowledge, that if you're shopping for a car, it seems to be the case that you don't want to ever buy a new car, because when you drive it off the lot immediately, it devalues a couple of $1,000s. Is there ever a time that you would advise someone to go new car shopping instead of looking at a pre-owned vehicle first?
Absolutely, and that's the statement you just made is true, but then again, it's not true.
Okay.
You really can't drive a new car for free, because when you buy a new car, it's going to depreciate, number one, the first day that you drive it off a lot, because the car is never worth what you pay for it. But what you can do if you're somebody who can afford it to drive new vehicles. I've got a doctor that bought a 2008, and he did this when it was brand new, 2008 Honda Accord, and he said, look, I want to show you. He says, the last vehicle I owned was an Acura MDS. I paid $35,000 for it. He said, I just sold it for $14,000, and I owned it for less than 2 years.
Wow.
Now, that's a big hit. He goes, I bought this brand-new vehicle because, I could afford a brand-new vehicle, but now I know that this car is going to cost me $3,000 a year to drive. I know that, and I can afford that, so I'm buying a new vehicle. So that's where it applies. But let me give you an example, I think that is critically important if you've got the time,
sure,
of a new car sale. Let's say that you and I, or let's say that we're looking at a car ad, and the car ad says 0% financing, one-time opportunity. Plus, we're going to give you a $3,000 instant cash rebate that you can put toward the purchase of a car. Plus, we're going to give you the extended warranty. Plus, there's no additional fees. So we get excited and we say, man, that's a good deal. So we walk into, say, a Cap dealership, and we see a brand new Sedan DeVille on the showroom floor. Now, we don't want to really put any money down because we're getting free money from the dealership. Interest free is like free money. So the car sells for $55,000. We know we're getting $3,000 off right off the bat, and we know it's interest free. But we're savvy car buyers, so we negotiate another $2,000 off this car. So now what are we going to do? We're going to purchase a $55,000 Cadillac for $50,000. And we're going to finance it all because of interest-free financing. But we have a little niche. We tell the dealer, we say, you know what? We can't afford $1,000 a month car payments. So he says, no problem. I'll be right back. I'll get this approved. And he comes back out and he says, okay, your payments are $835 a month. Can you afford that? And we say, yeah. For 6 years. I say, okay. So we buy the car. What did we do? We went in with good credit. We purchased a brand new $55,000 vehicle for $50,000. We didn't put anything down, and we had to pay $835 a month. Now, we drive the car for 24 months, which is 2 years. $835 times 24 is $20,000 out of our pocket. What is that $50,000 car worth 2 years later? $24,000. You still owe $30,000 on it. You see what I mean?
Sure.
You still owe $30,000. So you're $6,000 upside down. So if you sell the car for $24,000, you got to come out of pocket another $6,000. So what did that car cost you to drive for 2 years? $26,000 cash out of your pocket for 2 years. That's a lot of money.
Absolutely.
That's $1,000 a month. Didn't we tell the guy we couldn't afford to pay over $1,000 a month? I mean, and that doesn't include maintenance and stuff. Let's just say that all the maintenance was thrown in, and we're not talking about extended warranties, and we're not talking about any possible breakdowns. But that car cost you $26,000 out of your pocket to drive. You know, 70% of America, as an individual, not together, make less than $30,000 a year. So, I mean, this is a big, big deal. This is not a small deal. And this is, I used an example of a $50,000 car because it was easy for everybody to understand. It happens with a $20,000 car. It happens with a $25,000. It doesn't matter. It's the same story. There are certain things that you need to know to protect yourself. And instead of spending time going out and shopping and talking and getting confused like our caller, I'll show you where to spend your time and, you know, find somebody who will be honest with you and sell you a car, because you're going to know exactly what to say to them, and they're going to agree to it because they want to sell you a car. It's real simple. We're not trying to keep anybody from making money. We want them to make money, but we want to know what they're making, and it's really not hard to do.
They call him Mr. Drive Free. The book is Drive Free or Damn Close to It, guaranteed. Anthony Scavuzzo joins us on the line. We've got just a few minutes left with you today, and Anthony, when you're car shopping, and this is an email question that we've received, it looks like from Max in Virginia. He essentially, to boil it down, is asking about your thoughts on selecting a domestic versus an import, and if that plays at all into your methodology in saving money when car shopping.
Not in saving money on cars. It does and it doesn't, and you'll understand when you read the book. That's kind of a question that is a little bit entailed.
Okay.
I can answer it in several different ways. So I, you know, and which would take a lot of time. The number one car is Honda. Number two is I mean, and it's a specific Honda. It's Honda Civic, Honda Accord, you know, and then you go to Toyota, and they go back and forth between number one and number two. So the quality of car is all personal preference. It really is. I like American-made cars because I like to do business with American people. Now, and I buy them. But a lot of these cars, a lot of the parts are made in America, and a lot of the assemblies are done in America. So, you know, I mean, we're just in a diversified situation here to where, I don't down anybody for buying foreign cars and stuff. I've owned them. But it's more of a personal preference.
The most prevalent thing to look at is depreciation.
Depreciation is the number one.
Yeah, because a Honda Accord or a Honda Civic is going to depreciate a lot less than a Cadillac. And then, and I show you this in the book, I'll give you a big tip here. Any car that you can buy at a rental car agency is not a car that you want to buy new.
Really? No, why is that?
Right. Because let's use the Cadillac for example. Cadillac sedan de ville. They're $50,000. And a lot of people go in and buy them. And the rental car companies buy them too. And in about a year, the rental car companies are going to buy the new model. So they release all those hundreds of cars into the wholesale market, which drives the price way down. See what I mean? So
interesting.
There you go. So I mean, it's really that simple. So that car is going to depreciate a lot faster than a car that's not on a rental car lot. And see, these are just basic little things. That's just one tip. But you'll have the knowledge to be able to drive free or damn close to it. A gentleman called me and told me, he gave me that famous deal. Do you realize? I said, yeah. He said, I bought a Lincoln Aviator, brand new. And I put $10,000 down. He told me the whole deal exactly how he did it. He goes, for the first time, and I'm 57 years old, I was able to figure out how much I've lost on this car. I lost $17,200 on this vehicle. And he was a little upset about it. And I said, now you can solve it. He goes, oh, no, that's not what I'm mad about. What I'm mad about is that we make a good living, and we wonder where our money goes. And I've got three cars. He goes, I'm taking a beating on all of them. So, I mean, that's how we solve this. I mean, if you've got more than one car, I mean, this thing, I guarantee that after reading this book and applying these strategies, you'll save a bare minimum $5,000.
It's interesting. You say on your website that, and quite often you hear the disclaimers on TV and radio commercials about results not being typical, but in fact, you say that if you use the strategies and drive free, that $5,000 is a typical savings. The $5,000 to more than $25,000 on a high-end vehicle.
Yeah, and I'm telling you what, it's hard to give you a number on what people will save, but I'm going to guess it's $10,000 or more in cash. So I mean, it's up there. I use $5,000 as a minimum, and it is the minimum. It'll save anybody less than $5,000. You're going to save money on the car purchase. You're going to save money on financing. You're going to save a ton of money on depreciation. You're going to save money, when on the trade. There's several areas you're going to save money. You're going to save money on, different things that I disclosed to you in the book. So I mean, each one of those areas, depending on how long you keep the car for depreciation, for example, you can save a tremendous amount of cash.
Well, I'll tell you, I am definitely sold. As a guy who spent way too much money on too many vehicles, I will pick up Drive Free or Damn Close to It Guaranteed. It's available online at MrDriveFree.com. That's MrDriveFree.com. Anthony Scavuzzo, thanks for your time today. It sounds like you put an awful lot of thought, effort, and energy into a book that could really benefit all of us.
I appreciate your time, and thank you for helping me spread the word.
You bet. It's MrDriveFree.com. MrDriveFree.com. Anthony Scavuzzo is the author. I'm Burke Allen on WAMS. Hang on, because in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Dr. Kenneth Bolton. Dr. Bolton is the co-author of a new book about the great American composer, Eli Siegmeister. We'll find out about what makes him so important, why he deserves more attention, and what drove Dr. Bolton to write the book. It's coming up in just a moment. This is WAMS Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network.
Tomorrow, Rich. Stay out too late with the guys? Lucky for you, Cook Floral in Ravenswood is having a special on roses. One dozen long stem roses for just $19.99. Cook Floral also has fresh cut flowers, live plants, and assorted gift baskets. I guess it all depends. Just how late did you stay out? Cook Floral, Ravenswood.
Thanks for listening to WAMS on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Burke Allen. We just heard the great Frankie Ford, a famous Louisiana early rock and roller with C. Cruz, and joining us on the telephone, also from Louisiana, professor at Southeast Louisiana University and the author, or co-author, I should say, of Eli Siegmeister, American Composer. Dr. Kenneth Bolton is on the line. Hi, Dr. Bolton. Nice to join you.
Hi, Burke. Nice to join you, too.
Now, you've written a book about a gentleman whose name perhaps has been somewhat lost through the mist of time, but if you look at a composer of the stature of Eli Siegmeister, this is a guy who left, some would say, an indelible imprint on American music.
Yes. Well, let me just correct your pronunciation of his first name, Eli.
And see, and that's exactly, you helped me make my point exactly.
Eli Siegmeister was indeed one of the central players, if you will, in the development of a strongly modern and independent American compositional style beginning in the 1920s and really continuing through the end of his life in 1991. So this type of book was long overdue on a figure of his stature.
Now, you are yourself a pianist, I understand, and
that's
quite
correct.
An accomplished one. What is it that drew you to writing this book and drew you to Eli's music to begin with?
Well, during my years as a student, a doctorate student at the University of Maryland, I was introduced to Siegmeister's music a little roundabout way. I, for a number of years during that period of time, was extremely attracted and influenced and involved in the music of Aaron Copland, certainly more of a household name compared to Siegmeister's.
Sure.
And when the time came for me to select a dissertation topic, I knew that unfortunately Copland was sort of out because so much had been done on him, so much had been researched about Copland's life and music that there really wasn't anything new that I could add to it. But I really wanted to write and to research something having to do with the American, developing American musical scene in the 20th century. So I started looking around at Copland's circle, if you will, and Siegmeister's name popped up quite quickly, and I hit a gold mine. Siegmeister wrote no fewer than 40 pieces for piano, including five very, very large-scale sonatas and a wrath of smaller pieces. And very little of it had been performed or recorded in any large degree, so there was plenty for me to dig into. And now, as far as the book is concerned, the last year, 2009, was the centennial of Eli Siegmeister's birth, and so we were hoping that that this book would in fact come out last year, and so we missed it by about 3 months, unfortunately. But better late than never.
Sure. Dr. Leonard Lerman is your co-author of this book, and by the way, we're talking with Kenneth Bolton, the co-author of Eli Siegmeister, American Composer. How did you get to know Dr. Lerman, and what did you guys have in common in writing this book?
Okay. Yes, well, we're both pianists. Dr. Lerman is, I think, the primary mover and shaker on the music and research of Siegmeister's life. He himself started working with Siegmeister as a very young compositional student when Leonard was 11 years old. And by the end of Siegmeister's life, some 30 years later, Siegmeister described Leonard Lerman as nothing less than his continuator.
Wow.
I understand that he told Leonard that if he left anything unfinished, he was confident that Leonard would complete it. And in fact, Leonard has completed a number of his pieces in the years since his death. Leonard's career overall has really reflected that of Sigmeister, his teacher, in terms of its fullness. I mean, Leonard is a composer of great repute, conductor, pianist, teacher, writer, and along with being the undisputed authority on the life and music of Sigmeister.
Our guest is Dr. Kenneth Bolton. He's written a book called Elie Sigmeister, American Composer, with Dr. Leonard Learman. And as you look back on Sigmeister's career, he not only wrote this wonderful music for pianists, he was also a Broadway composer, even scored some major Hollywood motion pictures.
Yes, yes. The probably the most well-known one is the score to the 1959 film They Came to Cordura, starring Gary Cooper and Rita Hayworth, no less. But in terms of his overall output, I mean, it's like the guy never stopped composing. 20 major dramatic works for the stage, including a number of major operas, 9 symphonies, just like Beethoven,
wow,
by the way. No fewer than 159 songs for voice and piano, several major choral works. The two most important are probably I Have a Dream from 1967, of course commemorating the death of Martin Luther King, and the Cantata for FDR from 1981. And then you throw into that the a rich assortment of concertos, chamber works, solo pianos, lots of folk song arrangements, and of course the film music. And you have a composer who wrote music that anyone, regardless of their instrumental or vocal background, can explore.
Dr. Bolton, why is it, do you believe, that certain composers and performers tend to have a more lasting recognition in the public eye and a continued fascination as opposed to others? Why, for example, do we remember Charles Dickens and Edgar Allan Poe as opposed to the thousands of other writers from the Victorian era?
That's a very good question. And I suppose every composer of any note has his or her own followers. The question is, how does one take that next leap? And I think, again, it's impossible not to compare Copland and Sigmeister, since they were exact contemporaries, virtually. Copland did have the advantage of extremely favorable critical acclaim throughout his life, no matter what style he composed in. And I must say, Copland's overall style did tend to change with the times. And although Sigmeister's style did also evolve, it evolved up to a point. I would say in his work post-1960, he hit upon a style that worked for him. It wasn't strictly atonal. It wasn't strictly neoclassical. It was sort of a combination of a style that involved certainly a strong dissonant element, but also enveloped indigenous American qualities such as ragtime and jazz. And it's a very attractive sort of style, but I don't think his style really evolved much beyond that, and he was criticized by some for turning out these large-scale works, one after another, in a style that he had that basically didn't change over the last 30, 35 years of his life. And so maybe his overall contentment with where he was at put him behind some of the other American composers whose style did take on somewhat of an evolution.
Kenneth Bolton is our guest. He's written a book about the great American composer Elie Sigmeister, and there's an old saying that goes along with that, Dr. Bolton, about why in the Disney cartoons, Goofy and Pluto were both featured, but Goofy was a talking dog and Pluto had no lines, and when asked why, well, Mickey Mouse said, because Goofy had a better agent. So perhaps it's a lack of PR, but you are out to right that wrong with your new book.
I hope so.
Now, Sigmeister also was involved, I guess, to a certain extent in the folk song movement in the 1940s and early 50s, and you know, along with the Woody Guthries and Pete Seegers. Talk to us a little about that.
Yes, yes. Actually, he was initially introduced to the American folk song movement in the mid-30s when he was involved with the so-called Composers Collective, this group of brash, firebrand American composers in New York. And it was just about the time when American music was making a move towards being towards something that appealed to a broader American public. And indeed, throughout the 40s, you have Sigmeister and Copeland and others who really hit their stride in terms of producing music that that gained a broad appeal over throughout the country. And Sigmeister realized that the power of folk song's simplicity really proved had a lot of potential with him in particular, with his own music. Yes, he did collaborate with Seeger and Guthrie. He also founded and toured with his own group called the American Ballad Singers, which is a very small vocal ensemble consisting of three women and three men, and they were a group for about 5 years between 1940 and 1945, and they toured throughout the country, and he presented no fewer than 70 to 80 concerts a year. And their repertoire was, again, very focused on American folk song. Their repertoire was composed of anything from early American folk songs all the way through contemporary folk songs. And so the folk song movement was a very important element for Sigmeister's growth as a composer personally, and also as a composer who really strove to connect with the American public. And he did through the better part of that decade. That was really the high point of his critical acclaim.
If you'd like to pick up a copy of the book about Sigmeister, Elie Sigmeister, American Composer, there's a link right here on our page, WAMS, and you can also pick it up online at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and bookstores everywhere. The co-author, Kenneth Bolton, Dr. Kenneth Bolton, is joining us. And in our last couple of minutes, the obvious question is, you know, your co-author, Dr. Learman, studied under Sigmeister, even as a young man. Did you yourself ever personally meet him?
Sigmeister. No, I did not have the pleasure and the honor. It was in the mid-90s when I was a doctorate student and searching for that, at that point, elusive dissertation topic. And I guess I had the pleasure of the next best thing. I met and worked very closely with Elie Sigmeister's own son-in-law, who is the wonderful pianist Alan Mandel, who is Professor Emeritus at American University in Washington, D.C.
Right here in our town,
and,
sure.
And he is the largest repository of Sigmeister's music and was so willing and generous and enthusiastic to work with a young scholar, as it were, and showed me, made copies of any and all Sigmeister's scores I needed. I had some private coachings with him. I did several lengthy oral history interviews on Sigmeister with him. So short of meeting the man and the legend himself, Alan Mandel was a pretty close second.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it sounds like the book has turned out fantastic. I'm sure the family is very happy with it.
Actually, they are. And that was always of paramount importance to Leonard and myself, that we were not only honoring Sigmeister the composer, but the entire Sigmeister family.
It's a name you want to search out as you're surfing the internet, and it's Elie Sigmeister, and that's spelled Sigmeister. Find out more about this great American composer and pick up the book, Elie Sigmeister, American Composer. Our co-authors are Dr. Leonard Learman and our guest today, Dr. Kenneth Bolton. Kenneth, I sure appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us on WAMS.
I had a lot of fun. Thanks, Kirk.
You're quite welcome. Best of luck with the book, and if you need more information, you can always log on to WAMS and pick up the book at the link right here on our page. It's a glorious Friday afternoon in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. I'm Burke Allen. Thanks for listening. Now, go out and make it a great day.